Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome to the Magic Week in Review, bringing you news, rumor, and culture reports from the front lines of the magic industry. I'm Justin Robert Young, editor of iTricks.com, and on this edition of the podcast, we bring you, I think, one of my favorite personalities in magic. You might recognize him from the NBC show Them. He's behind the scenes on pretty much everything cool that's happening in magic always. Ladies and gentlemen, Rico de la Vega. How you doing, Rico?
Hey, what is up, Justin and everybody on iTricks?
Well, it's good to have you back on the show. Last time we talked a lot about, working on Cyril's projects and everything else that you're doing. And this time we want to go a little bit more in line with a column you did for us. I guess it was maybe 2 months ago about some of the gigs that you did on the way up. And we will get to all of that. But first, I want to remind everybody that trickshopmagic.com is where you're going to need to go if you want to get all the coolest magic stuff in the world. Now, and I say the coolest stuff, but I don't mean necessarily the new stuff. See, that's the problem. Everybody tries to sell you what, you know, they can get a good margin on from the wholesalers or the new thing that they just ordered. I mean, because they're looking at a warehouse and they're looking at 7,000 units, this brand new thing they just bought, and they got to move it. So they got to put a lot of flash and glitz and put it in a funny package and make an awesome commercial. And they're going to sell it to you whether the trick's good or not. That's not what they do at Trick Shop Magic. They got the old school brick and mortar experience where you can talk to them and just find out what's good for your act. Head on over there. They have a live chat feature that you're going to find awesome. And Sam Blankenship has been a supporter of this show and this website for almost as long as there's been a website and a podcast. So check them out, trickshotmagic.com. Let them know that iTrick sent you. Now, Rico.
Hold on a second. Wait, hold on. I'm writing that down.
Trickshopmagic.com.
That sounds awesome.
.com. See? That's the thing. When we convert the guests, you know that the ad's working.
See if they're any good.
All right. Well, Rico, you wrote a thing for us talking about three gigs that you had on the way, up to the career that you have now. Specifically, you worked on Ragtime with Franz Harari.
Yep.
What I wanted to kind of focus on was just a step back from that and recognizing opportunity and understanding, you know, what is right for you in your career. Because I think that's a big question mark, because people kind of maybe hesitate with stuff like that. That maybe this is beneath me or this is too advanced for me. You know, what goes through your mind before you take on a gig that, you know, seems almost foreign to you?
Well, here's what I do. I try to take on every gig that comes to me, because that way I'm always challenging myself. For instance, the Ragtime thing, I didn't know anything about Broadway musical. I knew a little bit about Illusion, and I'm like, all right, let's give it a shot and let's see what happens. So
for people who didn't read the column, explain what your role on Ragtime. Ragtime, of course, is a Broadway musical. It's been very successful. It's toured around the world. What was your role with the LA production of Ragtime?
My role for the LA production of Ragtime was essentially illusion coordinator. Franz Harari had built an illusion for the musical, and because there's a Houdini character in the musical, and Franz had to design an illusion for it. It was awesome. It was a crazy, cool, it's one of his best and most deceptive illusions that I think that he has. So Houdini gets into a box, it breaks apart, he almost falls out, it explodes, he disappears, and he reappears as the conductor conducting the orchestra right in front of everybody. So it's a kick-ass illusion. So what I had to do was I had to supervise that illusion, teach the stunt doubles how to fall in and out of it, and how to operate everything.
Okay. And that's something where you obviously are very well-versed at this point in your career in stage managing and, understanding what illusions are and giving them the ins and outs of stuff, but you've never done it in this field. You've never done it for these kinds of bosses, and you've never done it for these particular audiences.
Right. Precisely.
So, I mean, I guess my question is, I mean, does it take reps? Where does that drive to say, you want to know what? Because this is new, because this is strange, I want to do it.
Where does that drive come from? I think just it comes from determination and desire to try something new. I think everybody has that in them. And I think that's something that everybody should strive to do because, you know, you stagnate if you stick with the same thing all the time. So trying something new is the only way to go.
I mean, but you know magic better than I do. And my sense would be in magic that that's not necessarily ultimately the case, that a lot of people are very content to kind of stick with what they know. It's a fairly rote art form where, you know, even people who spend a lot of money on illusions and invest time and effort and stake their reputations will be on pattern and movements that are directly from the manufacturer.
Absolutely, they would. And that's that's good for a lot of people. The way I look at it is, you know, Prince has got to stop playing Purple Rain at some point because he's got to be tired of singing it all the time.
Yeah.
So there's always got to be a point when an artist has to progress and has to do something that makes them want to push themselves to be better. And that's not necessarily saying that if you stick with the same act for the rest of your life, that's bad, because some people have amazing acts that they shouldn't change. But it doesn't mean that they can't go off and try new things on the side.
Can you remember the first time that you had an experience like that, where you just saw something that you're like, this is impossible. I don't fit in this role, and I absolutely need to become obsessed about doing it.
Oh, man, yes. Actually, you know what? There was one time when I was touring with Greg Wilson, son of Mark Wilson, in the magical land of Alakazam. And Greg gave me an opportunity. He said, I want you to be my stage manager. I want you to run the show. And I'm thinking, I don't do that sort of thing, but I really wanted to try it. And so that was right around the same time that Ragtime was closing up. So that's when I started shadowing the stage managers at Ragtime to see how they really work and what they do and how to run a Broadway show. Because I figure if I can learn how to run a Broadway show, I can learn how to run a magic show. So that was something incredibly frightening, was to put that kind of pressure on me to make sure that the show goes well, because essentially the whole show rides on, well, a lot of people, but the whole show rides on the stage manager, the crew, the assistants, everybody, and not just the magician.
Yeah.
Which is something that all magicians need to remember, because they shouldn't treat any of those people like crap. So, which is what I've had one of my experiences too, but that was the thing. It was about venturing into a new area that I was completely uncomfortable with in order to try to be better at something, at anything. And that's why I dove headfirst into that stage manager role. And it worked out pretty well. From there, I got to tell you this one. From there, Cyril was competing over at the Siegfried and Roy Desert Magic Seminar, World Magic Seminar competition.
Okay.
And he called me and asked me, all right, can you be the stage manager, call the shots for my segment in that competition? I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. So what happened was, the night before the competition, calls me into his room and he goes, okay, here's what we're going to do, and here are all the cues. And I go crazy. I basically have an anxiety panic attack because I realize he's going for the Siegfried and Roy Gold Lion Head.
Yeah.
And if I mess up,
he's screwed.
Losing. Yeah, he's completely screwed.
Yeah, you hold his fate in your hands.
Yes, and it was ridiculously crazy because I had so much pressure on me to excel, and here was the test. This was a huge test because now there's money on the line. Now there's Cyril's career on the line.
Yeah.
So that went really well. It went so well, in fact. Well, Cyril won that competition.
Yeah.
It went so well, in fact, that some people thought it was rigged for Cyril to win because
his segment went better than the others.
Yes. So not to toot my own horn or anything like that, but there was a lot of chaos going on there that day. And the fact that I was not involved in that chaos and I was only focused on one thing, that it made it look that way.
Well, it's not news to say that magicians in general like to focus on magic, and they're not necessarily unique you know, in terms of artists wanting to focus on some art, you know, on exactly the kind of art that they are good at. You know, musicians want to make music. They don't want to be accountants and road managers and, you know,
yeah,
you know, stuff like that. And magicians, I think, are a lot of the same way. And I do think it's probably an easily overlooked position to say, you know, there should be somebody setting up my props beforehand and coordinating with the technical people to make sure that all my cues are set and, you know, standing next to people when those buttons are supposed to be pressed so they can say, press the button, press the button, press the button.
Right, right.
But let me ask you this. So as important as that is, and you've certainly demonstrated that in your career, you are a magician, you are a performer, and you are very good at what you do. A lot of people don't want to get involved with these kind of roles, be they advisor, stage manager, you know, go out on tour in support of somebody else, even if it's their friend, because they feel it will take away from their own performing magic career. Okay. What was your perspective on that as you got involved with more behind the scenes stuff?
Well, the thing is, I think that became really important for me because I was able to appreciate what it's like to be on the other side of the performance end, the behind the scenes role, stage manager or the production manager or what have you, the roadie, the grunt, the crew. I was all of that. And I really got to feel what it was like to be in that role. So that way, when I was back on stage as a performer, I knew how to treat the roadies, the crew, the stage managers, the techs, everybody, because the show rides on them more than it does you. I mean, I had an opportunity when one of the performers bitched out at me about a spotlight, and I'm like, listen, if you keep yelling at me like that in front of the crew, I'll make sure the curtain never opens on you.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was me being mean, but I was just retaliating to something they were saying.
Sure, sure.
But that's the whole thing. It's like, in order to really respect other people's roles, I myself had to step into their roles in order to understand it. And I think that just goes with a lot of other things. You know, like if you're a musician, you know, you want to learn music theory. That's great, you know, because that'll help you become better. If you're an actor, maybe you want to know what's going on behind the scenes and look into more of that. So it's, I think it all has to do with fine-tuning you as a performer by learning all the things that happen all around it.
Would you say that you are a better magician on the other side of working behind the scenes than you would have been if you had only, if let's say you had taken all that time and effort and only worked on the performance elements of your act? Are you better for spending the time behind the scenes or spending the time on your act?
I would like to think that I'm better now because I'm more camera aware. I'm more angle aware of where the camera should be. I'm a little bit more aware of interacting with people on the street for a shot and seeing how that works for other magicians that have done it in the past and other magicians that I've worked with and applying that. So that way I think it does help a lot. However, I haven't been performing in a little while, actually a long while. So I'm more behind the camera than I am on stage, but I do believe that it has helped me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, You're behind the camera because you're getting paid very well, you know, to be behind the camera. Yeah, that's where you know you are I would say the top in your field. I mean, I can't think of, I mean, there's a short list of people with your kind of qualifications that could put, you know, have the versatility and experience to go from helping, you know, your friend Michael Grasso on America's Got Talent to, you know, being the boss on a television series, you know, for as varied companies as, you know, foreign and domestic. So I think there's
right. Well, thank you for that. That's a compliment, but I think that there's always somebody better. And I think the only reason why I'm doing okay with what I'm doing is because I've made a ton of mistakes. Like I've made a lot of mistakes. So it's more important for me that I know where not to go than what to do.
What's the biggest mistake you've ever made?
Biggest mistake that I've ever made? Yeah. Oh, gee.
Come on. The big one. The one that you're afraid to tell people because you think that they'll think less of you.
Oh, well, okay, let me see. Because the first thing that comes to mind, I don't think if people think less of me, but I almost lit a lady's cleavage on fire at the Magic Castle with
Let's
the
go.
Paper.
Let's go. Yeah, explicit detail. How did that happen?
Back when I was a junior magician at the Magic Castle, I was doing my stage act, and I do a thing where I throw flash paper now off to the side, but I used to throw it up into the audience and try to aim for the center aisle, and sometimes I'd miss. One flew right into a lady's cleavage.
The Valley of Fire.
Yeah, the Valley of Fire indeed. And she patted it out, and then she looked around at everybody and in amazement that she didn't get burned. After the show, she actually came up to me and said, "That was amazing. It didn't even burn me." I'm like, "Yep, magic fire. Magic fire does not burn, and you're not going to sue me. You're not going to sue me for that."
But, that's great.
But there's bigger things. I mean, I'm sure there's worse things than almost setting a woman on fire, but yeah. I just can't, you know.
Which, by the way, that's a great, uniquely magic line. There has to be a mistake worse than almost setting a woman on fire. I mean, would you say, are there, because there's a dark side to all of this. I mean, as much as, you know, I think it is a very salient lesson, and it has certainly done you well to continue to take jobs that, you know, you want to challenge yourself on. They're not all, they might all be learning experiences, but they aren't all pleasant. Have you gotten yourself in a position where, you know, by the end of it, you're like, oh God, this is terrible. I wish I hadn't done this.
There was one like that, but it was completely, it was magic related because I had done a JCPenney commercial. There was a JCPenney ad campaign. Forgot what it was. Show them your magic or something like that. But I consulted for that commercial. Those same people called me back to do a Heineken commercial because they needed a poker expert. And because they were filming a poker scene for a Heineken commercial, and I thought, yeah, I'm a poker expert. Not really. But the whole thing of me saying I try to take every job just to see what I can do, that was one of those ones.
Bit off a little more you can chew?
Did say again?
You bit off a little bit more than you could chew?
A little bit. But the thing is, what was cool about it was I was able to BS my way through it enough to where nobody really knew.
Sure.
And, yeah, so we're filming this thing in Vegas, and there's, and I don't think the commercial ever came out, which is really sad, but there were all these celebrities around the table. Michael Madsen, there was, who else was there? There was Don King. You know, all these people, and they wanted to be playing poker.
So that was the commercial was celebrities playing poker, and then, you know, they show a graphic for whatever, the Heineken, or they're drinking Heineken, I guess, right?
Precisely, and they needed me to make sure that the celebrities knew what they were doing by playing poker. So I basically got through it.
How much... or how many times did you open the poker page on Wikipedia on your iPhone? Because I would imagine it's constant.
A whole lot. Oh, my God. Are you kidding?
It's just permanently on there. It's like the third slide there when you go into the multiple windows mode. It's just, it's like, oh, well, hold on. Wait, somebody really important just texted me. And then the big blind goes to the second player. Big blind goes to the second player, Don.
That was exactly it. I actually called up my magic teacher, Lori Christopher Michaels, who was in Vegas at the time, and who was a big poker player. And I said, listen, I got into this situation. He said, and he's like, good man, good job. And he's like, do you know anything about poker? I'm like, nope. He's like, good man, good job. He's like, what do you need to know? So he gave me a little crash course. He came down, and basically it all worked out. I lucked out. I really lucked out.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's great. Now let's focus a little bit on what you're working now. You just got back from Hawaii with the Cyril thing. We saw a little footage of that, and AXN announced it a couple months ago. Is that all wrapped up now, or are you still shooting that?
That's all wrapped up. It is in the process of offline editing right now, and I believe it's slated to come out in May in Southeast Asia. So, very interesting, very different take on Cyril. I think people are going to find it. Some people are going to laugh their asses off if they know him.
Yeah.
And some people who don't know him are probably going to be like, what is going on? But they're still going to laugh. So, we tried to have a removal of what he's been doing in the past. And realistically, it was an experiment. We just wanted to see what would happen if we tried something different.
I'll tell you what, there are worse places on Earth to do a experiment than Hawaii for a couple months, right?
That was not the sucky part. You're right. That was actually Cyril's call. He's like, where should we do this? I go, where do you want a vacation? He's like, let's spend a month in Hawaii. I'm like, that's a good place. Let's start writing it.
There we go. And then, you know, smash cut to you at AXN. This really needs to be in Hawaii for these several reasons. Also, would you like to play poker? So can you tell us anything else? I mean, other than, you know, that it's going to be a little bit different tone-wise, anything else about the show?
I can't. There's some new magic in there that Cyril's never done before. We created some interesting things. We're revamping some classics, some audience favorites. And I can't tell you much about it. I'm sure the AXN press release will tell you more at some point.
Yeah.
I think that's supposed to happen in mid-April. Not sure, the next release. And, yeah, right now it's still in the top secret what is it about phase.
Gotcha. Well, I'm sure we will have the information on iTrix and hopefully we'll talk a little bit more about it as it gets closer to air.
Yes, we will.
Speaking of stuff, you know, foreign television, Cyril's in a very interesting place for American viewers in that, you know, he's an English speaker. He's been on American television. He's gigantic in a country that is not America. But we've become, you know, he's known to American audiences by and large, not necessarily Magic fans, from viral videos, from things that have popped out on YouTube. But there was a story this week that the company that now owns Objective, all three, that does Darren Brown stuff, does a lot of Magic stuff out in the UK, is doing a smart television app for Samsung and LG, I believe. Now they're going to try and sell their television programs outside. I mean, licensing them exclusively will still be their main source of revenue. But now, for library titles, they're going to make it available to viewers directly in the U.S. and the U.K. Over these televisions, which, you know, for U.S. viewers that don't necessarily have access to a lot of the stuff, that not everything that they make has gotten licensed for American television, gives them access to a lot of this kind of material. Cyril seems like somebody that could be a great beneficiary if, you know, and I don't know what your relationship is with AXN on, you know, if you guys partner with a production company and sell it to AXN or AXN produces it themselves. But if they made library titles like everything they've done with Cyril before available directly to American consumers via television apps, it seems like Cyril could, you know, benefit greatly considering his body of work. Do you think that this is, you know, this is going to be closer to where we're getting with the future, being as television savvy as you are and understanding, you know, foreign and domestic television markets and rights?
I think that's an interesting way to go. And that's an interesting point because television now isn't so much television anymore. Everybody's watching everything online on laptops and desktops and stuff. And even on their cell phones and iPads. So
or even TV. I mean, how much time? I mean, I know, you know, I know for me, I spend probably 50% of my television is either iTunes or Netflix.
Wow. Yeah, because that's the thing. For me, it's like my TV's never on. I mean, when my TV's on, it's in the background, quiet with closed captioning on, you know?
Yeah.
So the whole thing about television now and media now is, what I think is the crazy immediacy of it, which is why Cyril got so big, was because of the viral videos and the immediacy to be able to see those videos. And if Samsung's going to be doing something like that, I think that's a good thing to do. Might be something interesting for Cyril to get involved in, or even anybody else who wants to get big quickly. And that can never be a bad thing to that kind of exposure.
Obviously you can't speak for, you know, the people that ultimately, you know, own. Well, I mean, do you guys, what is your rights situation? Are you licensing to AXN? Does AXN pay for it? Or are you working with a production company?
Cyril is, we're licensing it out. We're licensing out all the footage.
So you own the footage?
Cyril owns it.
Cyril owns the footage. So Cyril could make the Cyril, I mean, obviously outside of any kind of exclusivity windows he signs, you know, he could make the Cyril app and make it available.
Yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah, theoretically he could. Yeah, absolutely. because it's strange that he's so big overseas and he's not so big over here. I mean, he's huge in Magic everywhere.
Yeah.
But, you know. But
Magic is 13 people. I mean, we all know. There's 13 people in all of the Magic industry, and we all know their names.
Exactly, exactly. And so that's the whole thing about it. It's like, why isn't he a little bit bigger everywhere else? So that's an interesting thing, which we've always tried to expand him. So right now we're expanding him into Southeast Asia and keeping him where he's strong and where he's got a good fan base. But America's a tough sell. You know, America's a really tough sell.
No, it is. It absolutely is. I mean, it's hard. And but then again, you know, I guess the question is now is I mean, geography still matters, but does it matter as much as it did? I mean, is selling to, I mean, getting on American television, either a cable or a broadcast network, would be a big deal. But if, let's say, you made things available online and you were able to capture just more of an American fan base than Cyril has now, or excite the fan base that he already has now in America, isn't that a net positive? And would that in your mind, to play devil's advocate, harm the ability to sell some of this footage exclusively to television networks?
You know, that's just it. It's a double-edged sword because, yes, it does harm it because they say, oh, we've seen this online already. Why are you going to do it on TV if everybody can just, you know, type it in and watch it there? Why you want to put it on our channel?
Yeah.
So it's always a balance of trying to convince them, yes, you need to see this. Yeah, you do need to see the hamburger again. Yeah, you do need to see this again. So it's a delicate balance, but you're right. It does harm it. And the other thing that harms it is the more, especially nowadays, the more material you put out there, the easier it is for people to rip it off. And that's a big thing that keeps happening whenever we come up with something, whenever Cyril comes up with something and we put it out there. It's online immediately. It's reverse engineered. It's repackaged and sold, you know, which is really sad. And that's happening with a lot of people. I mean, I know Kevin James's bowling ball is being ripped off overseas, too.
Well, so I mean, yeah, I think that's that. I mean, do you think that's more prevalent because Cyril's fame is based in, I mean, a lot of, I know, you know, China has a tremendous reputation for repackaging stuff. And you kind of hear by reputation that some of the Asian countries are, let's say, not exactly respectful of American copyright.
True. Yes, they're not. And yeah, I'm Asian, so I can say that. Yeah,
sure.
Asian. The whole thing is
I'm friends with an Asian person who's on the phone, so I'm allowed to say it. So
who else is on the phone?
You. You're Asian.
Okay, then. So there's this
cover
whole thing
for me,
your
Jesus.
Friends, so yeah. But the whole thing about it is the thing that harms it the most is, yes, sure, Asians copy the hell out of everything, and so do a lot of other countries, big deal.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that there, information is so immediately available nowadays on the internet that, you know, you got kids online that are reverse engineering tricks and then redoing it themselves. And then you get a bunch of carbon copies of one person doing the same effect, and which is sad. And or people can repackage it, sell it, make DVDs, kids buy those, and they become more clones. And the thing that I think is missing from what I grew up with is mentors, because we had mentors growing up saying, don't do that. That's somebody else's, you know, don't do that. That's somebody else's move. But nowadays it's like, download it, do it, you know, and do it exactly the way you see it. And it's a carbon copy. It's a clone, which is really sad because, you know, when you grow up on books and other people teaching you stuff, you have to figure out your own presentation. You have to figure out your own moves. You have to figure out, you have to decipher from the book what it means, you know, to tilt this way, you know, or shift the body this way. But with a video, it's prepackaged. They tell you everything. And so it kind of, kids nowadays are really, really talented, but they're all really carbon copies of everybody else. There's some young kids out there that are creating some really good things, but for the most part, everybody else who are consumers, it's a bunch of carbon copies. It's a bunch of clones, which I blame.
How different is that?
Internet.
I mean, go to the Magic Castle and there were great performers, people who are fantastic and super talented that are doing an effect that if you were a layperson and you were just interested in magic, you just like watching magic on television, all these super awesome people who I think are amazingly talented, will do tricks that other people that have done on television or and you know, they might not have invented, you know. So yep. how different are those clones from the to me, the 13-year-old who puts his thing up on YouTube and does something exactly how we saw it on the DVD, at least has an excuse, has the excuse of youth, you know?
Yep. Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. It goes back to mentors because, I mean, the magician's rule isn't there anymore, the magician's code, you know, where you basically try not to reveal any secrets and you basically try not to do what other people are doing. And if that, you know, the unspoken, hey, that's mine routine isn't around anymore. You know, when we would see something, if we wanted to do it, we would ask that person if it's okay to do it. And then if they say yes, then great. If they say no, then we'd say, can you help me think of a different way to do it so it's not like yours? You know, so.
But that's what good people do. You're good.
That is what good people do.
You do that. You are good. That isn't everybody, right? There's been people, right? People been ripping off things and doing crappy versions of other people's tricks forever, for as long as there's been tricks.
You're right. Screw this. I'm going to become bad.
No. Yeah, I'm saying, I guess my point is that the good people who care and people who would listen to a mentor will listen to and feel bad about when somebody on their YouTube page says, you're a ripoff and you suck. And that happens. On
a lot.
Yeah. I mean, and they will continue to, if you care and you care about refining your art, which is all the people that we care about. And I guess the only other point that I would make is that we have to assume that there has always been a constant of people who just want to learn tricks, want to expose secrets, and want to cash in, in the most crude way possible. Hey, look. Like, here's a double lift. Let me do a YouTube tutorial on what to do with double lift. And that's no different. I mean, it's different in terms of the scope of how many people can watch that, but it's no different than the kid who goes into school and says, look, I learned a double lift. Look, you can do it like that. And is immediately, you know, loses any kind of, you know, mystery that he could have.
Right.
But I guess it's just, it's like, I don't know. Number one, you know more about this than I do because you have spent more time in this field. So I am nobody to tell you otherwise, but I can't help but shake the idea that there's the problems we have now are A, not unique, and B, the people that do care have more of an opportunity to be more, to be better artists because they are exposed to more stuff and can therefore, you know, they know more of what's out there so they can create closer to something that's never been seen before.
True. I mean, that's true. But there's so many people out there that, you know, just rip off other people and have huge success from it. You know, there's.
I guess my question would be, is that different?
Is that different in what sense?
Have there always been people who have ripped off other people and to great success?
I think there's always that. That's always been around. Yeah. I mean, hell, I do. When I pick up a deck of cards and I show people stuff, none of my stuff is all terribly original. You know, I do standards. I do standard, ambitious card stuff like that, you know, and I've tried to create a couple of things and they're not really practical. You know, for some of the things that I do for myself aren't really practical. They work great for Cyril on TV. You know, but it's not something that you can pull out at a restaurant and then just go for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, creation is key. Trying to be original is key. I think it's okay to emulate, you know, to look at somebody else, take on their moves, try to become like them with the intention of changing it around so that way you become a little bit more yourself. Because I'm a big believer in when I consult for people, the thing that I do is I really try to make things that are for their personality.
Yeah.
And I don't like it when people say, oh, I just want to do this because that person did it. I'm like, well, how are you going to make it fit you? Because realistically, the magic is secondary to the personality. And if they don't like you, they're not going to watch you.
Yeah.
So It doesn't matter how good you are at something, how good you are at a magic trick. If they hate you, they're just not going to watch. So I'm really involved in just trying to make it about a person's personality, a performer's personality.
That's the best way to do it. I mean, I think if you're a cool person and then you do magic, you're in a much better position than if you're just trying to impress people with the fact that you're doing magic.
Which is what I've done in the past.
You just eyes down, just invade someone's personal space and just shove a deck, you know, right up into their mouth and say, pick a card.
I have done that. I did that out on Venice Beach and out on Universal City Walk when I was actually busking. Back when street magic was still really street magic, which when it was busking.
Yes. You know? And it wasn't having your friend wander around with a iPhone and record you performing for random people.
Yes. So I have invaded people's personal space with magic tricks. I'm guilty of that. I think I'm still guilty of that every now and then.
Personal space invader, Rico de la Vega.
Indeed.
All right. Well, what do you got coming up? Let's tease something. Tease something you haven't talked about before.
There's a bunch of things that are coming up that, again, I can't really talk about because I'm under NDA and I'm signing contracts to make sure, or confidentiality agreements to make sure that these things do not get out there. But I'm on a few projects right now that hopefully, if things go well, that everybody will be hearing about the effects that are happening soon. That's about all I can give.
Ugh, come on. Nothing. Is it TV related?
It is TV related. Yes. There's TV related stuff and there is, live stage magic stuff related. So yeah, there's a few things going on that are going to be very good projects for the people that are involved.
So coy.
Well,
you're a pro.
I don't want to get sued.
All of a sudden, you don't want to see like, and so do you deny that you said on the Magic Week and Review podcast that blah, 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 blah.
Exactly. And because now it's gotten to the point where these are companies that are, you know, not small companies. And yes, I don't want to get sued by them.
All right. Fine. Is it foreign or is it foreign or is it American?
Both.
Oh.
There are projects that are happening in a couple of continents and also here in America.
All right. I think that's all I'm going to get out of you. Well, what are you eating for dinner? Let's see. What are you thinking about for dinner? What do you want to do for that?
What do I want for dinner? You know what? I'm really craving an In-N-Out burger right now.
Oh, Jesus. I'd love to. Man, that's a great burger. I'll tell you what.
That is a good burger.
By the way, now we're going to do 40 minutes of burger chat with Rico and Justin. That's
a
double podcast this week.
Yeah.
Rico de la Vega has been our guest. Rico, people want to keep in touch with you and hear about all the zany adventures that you continue to go on. Where can they follow you?
I guess I tweet. Follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/ what is my at mark? I don't even know. @Enrico_de la Vega.
I think it's Enrico de la Vega.
I think there's an underscore in there because I remember being pissed that somebody else grabbed it before me.
Yeah, hold on. Let me do some fact checking here. Enrico de la Vega. That's you. You're right there.
Is it with the underscore? Is that what it is?
That is it. Yeah. You're sad you can't make it to St. Vincent this year.
I am sad. Did you see the lineup that's going on over there? There's some good people going on over there. And
I believe that the publisher of this very site, Andrew Main, is going to be at St. Vincent.
Andrew Main is going to be there, and that's one of the reasons why I'm angry that I can't make it.
Yeah. I don't know because he hasn't signed a contract, but there is another. Yeah. The last guest on the Magic Week in Review, I won't say his name, but it rhymes with Schmushwood. That maybe he'll go there. I heard rumors. I heard rumors from a credible source that he's negotiating. Ryan Schmushwood, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Might be negotiating. I heard iTrix can now report exclusively that a source with knowledge of the situation has told them that possibly he might go there, but it might not happen. Who
knows? Interesting.
Anyhow, you won't be there, which is very sad. But people can follow you on Twitter, and they can find out what you do instead of that. And also, apparently, you're speaking at MagicCon, huh?
I am speaking at MagicCon in San Diego, April 12th through the 15th. Yep, it's going to be a great convention. A lot of good names that are going to be there, and it's going to be a fun party.
Yeah, no, that's always the Bucks. They do a great
job. You coming out?
Those Buck kids. I don't know. I'm not sure. I went under the first
say
one.
Yes.
Well, I don't know. How about if you spill the beans on all your television stuff, then I'll buy my ticket right now out to San Diego for April.
All right. So I'm working on this blue whale appearance. Okay. Nobody's ever done blue whale because it's so gigantic and impossible. So
I swear to God, if there's an AXN promo where Cyril's standing in front of a blue whale, I'm going to literally lose my stuff all over my keyboard. It's going to be ridiculous. All right,
no
Rico.
Think of the blue whale, bro.
Exactly. It's like, I told you. Where are you now? Where's your flight, bro? Rico, thank you so much for joining us. As always, it's a pleasure, and we should have you and Cyril on one of these days, and we'll chat about whatever the Hawaii project is when it is closer to air.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me on, brother. It's always good to talk to you, man.
Absolutely. And that about wraps it up for the iTrix Magic Week in Review. Remember, if you would like to follow iTrix, it is at iTrix on Twitter, or head to iTrix.com the old-fashioned way and read all the newest news and rumors hitting you this week. This week, we got some really cool stuff. We got Kevin James and his trip to the White House in 2009. He gives us all the secret details behind that and so much more. So check it out, iTrix.com, or if you want to follow me, at Justin R. Young on Twitter. Until next week, bang a gong.